Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB and I take myself very seriously. Next to me is Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jonathan.
And of course, not hosting tonight, but still sitting there, is Tim Cocker. Cocker.
Good evening, gents.
Oh, right. Well, just remember, you can find us on Twitter at Ruby Podcast and all various other places, I guess. Where else can they find us, Tim?
Oh, everywhere. Just generally everywhere. And I suppose, I've just obviously just ran in and sat in my seat. Have you already apologised for the lateness of this podcast?
No, I haven't. But
That was because Phil wanted to go and get mashed in a field and JB wanted to talk about Love Island.
And yeah, basically, yeah. Now, we're going to start this with some rather sad news. Mm. A friend of the podcast, Will Travis, otherwise known as Pinky, sadly passed away this weekend. Will was part of Aylesbury Rugby Club. They have supported us literally from the beginning. And literally, Pinky was with us in Madrid this year. So real, real sad news. And I guess, you know, if you judge a man by the company he keeps, he was a pretty good bloke. I know that all those lads in Aylesbury will be hurting this week, so best luck to you boys.
Yeah, it's particularly sad. A very young man, and yeah, really, really sad. What struck me about the time we spent with the guys from Aylesbury Rugby Club, and you're right to point out that these guys have been supporters and got involved on the beers, listening, tweeting, all the rest of it. In fact, the last tweet on Will's thing was him was straight after the Madrid weekend, retweeting his mate Phil. But what struck me about those boys from Aylesbury Rugby Club is everything that rugby's amazing for, in the sense that you get these old stalwarts that have been around the block, and you've got these young upstarts, and they're side by side, and they're on the piss together, and that sense of community, that sense of spirit, and togetherness, and everything, and so they brought that to life. So I know you're right to say they'll be hurting. More than that, if Aylesbury Rugby Club need anything, if they're trying to, I don't know, keep Will's memory alive a little bit with anything, and we can help, obviously, goes without saying.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, well, I guess we should talk about some rugby.
Yeah, guess we should.
Well, where should we start with this week's rugby? Because actually, under the radar, there has been quite a lot going on. In fact, I might start with one.
Go on.
Who watched the European Championship Touch?
This was a I completely missed this. It was off my radar until I saw your tweets about it, JB. No. Did you know about this, Phil?
I did, because Nick Heath was competing.
Oh, was he?
Yes, was he?
He was.
Oh,
he was.
How did you get in this England team then?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
Righto. Well, that's going to be awkward. Okay. So the reason I watched it was because, do you know when you're a bit bored in work and every 5 minutes you go on a couple of websites? I mean, I guess you don't actually, Tim, because you don't get bored in work. You're always talking, right? But, and Phil, you actually work really hard. Right, so I guess when I'm in work, occasionally I go on different websites. So your NFL website is always open, and nothing ever changes.
No,
the BBC website, and sometimes I close down the BBC website and then Google BBC again and then log back in because I'm that bored. And this touch rugby thing just wasn't going away. It was there. The World Championships rugby, oh, European Championships rugby just dominated the whole replay. So I thought, right, forget it. I'm going to watch. Well, I had my reservations about touch before watching this. And now I am lost for words. So my main problem is not touch itself. Touch is a fine game. It's great in the same way that netball's great. You know, it's a game which should be played and should be enjoyed by masses. It just can't be called rugby because rugby is something which you need to be a little bit mental to play. You know, it's something about it where when you watch it, people say, "Oh, that's a really difficult game. You must be crazy to play that game." Touch is not that, and I resent it being called touch rugby.
I'm surprised you are so passionate about the semantics of the use of the word rugby.
No, because rugby's a special thing. Touch isn't. Touch is just a, you know, it's a training aid. You know, it's like if I went to rugby, and you know those shuttle drills you do, where you just run back and forth 10 times. Right, it's like calling them rugby shuttles and then saying that they are the equivalent of rugby because in rugby, you sometimes run back and forth.
You have to call them rugby league shuttles, I feel.
Yeah, rugby league shuttles. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. It's not, is it? It's simply not rugby. So it's a great game. Hope you all enjoy it. But it's more equivalent to netball. I'd argue netball's probably a slightly better game in terms of athleticism, spatial awareness and those sort of things. And skill to score.
Skill to score, maybe. You can't run with the ball in netball. So
no, but spatial awareness is
spatial awareness is different.
And then, actually, if you watch high-level netball, it's amazing. It's genuinely awesome.
It is good.
It is. I would say, imagine watching touch rugby rules performed by the guys that were in the Sevens World Cup. I think it would then look like a pretty good game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, yeah, I guess it would. But so it's still not rugby, is it?
No, I hear what you're saying there, but maybe your point is actually that the quality of skills that were on show...
Oh, hang on, we've not even... Oh, you'd like to talk about that? Well, I'm glad you did. So I literally watched 5 minutes of it. I was blown away because someone had submitted a video of Australia playing New Zealand at touch, and it is bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
It is class. This did not look like that. It did not look like that at all. I'm not going to go into... If you want to see what I thought of it, go on to my Twitter. I'll repost the video on the Egg Chasers Twitter account as well. You can have a look. It's been a little bit patronising. I feel a little bit bad that I did it, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, let's move quickly to the Sevens then.
Yes.
The Sevens World Cup.
Good place
now,
to
does
go.
Anyone know why it was 5 years since the last World Cup?
My guess would be organisation, but there could be another better reason for it.
So no,
or lack of.
Have they moved it away from a Lions series year?
Is that what
they've done?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's odd. Anyway, the last one was in 2013, and obviously it's 2018. But absolutely loved it. One thing, though, it's a bit of a worrying sign that it's not attractive enough to a broadcaster to want to take it.
I don't know. I just think it is still a niche sport. We like it when we watch it because there's loads of tries. I personally don't like it that much. I'm not trying to just poo-poo it. I just don't.
So it depends what you mean by like it. So I love watching the highlights. The problem is, to watch sevens, you have to watch kind of a full day's play or even a full weekend's play.
Yeah, you're right there.
And you've got these incredible, like, 10 minutes of action punctuated by 20 minutes of nothing, followed by 10 minutes of action. And it's, I don't know, as a spectacle, I'm sure, so I've been to the Twickenham Sevens, London Sevens, and it's a brilliant day out because in those punctuated pauses, you can get hammered. And there's everyone in fancy, there's people in fancy dress, it's a brilliant
party
atmosphere.
There's as much fun in the stands as in the, on the pitch.
But on TV, it's not quite the same. Mm. You kind of want to dip in for the semi-final and the final.
Do you know what I kind of equate it to a little bit? Is watching a jiu-jitsu tournament. Like, if you just take the one match out of context, like two men rolling on the floor, no big whoop. If you watch it from the very, very start and you work out who's good, who's not good, you know, it's a little... jiu-jitsu mixed with test cricket, as in it's, or one day cricket, as in it lasts all day, maybe well, 2 days.
And to take that martial arts theme a little bit further, you know, in the Karate Kid movie, they didn't show every single match.
No, but
there was a montage.
But they should have
a musical montage.
There should have been a second DVD, the extended, yeah, the extended
full tournament.
Yeah, full tournament DVD. That's what you were saying, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I was
saying.
But I didn't watch the whole thing. But the way it was broadcast on the World Rugby YouTube channel and whatnot, it actually meant you could scroll through what after the fact in the morning. You could just I just scrolled through to the matches I wanted to watch and watched whole matches, only the ones I really wanted to see.
There are some phenomenal highlights on it, but it's just I've only got so many hours in the day, and a whole day committed to sevens might have been a little bit such difficult
in terms of combining. The handling skill set, the speed, the fitness, the athleticism, and the physicality, there's not much like it in such small doses.
Yeah,
you kind of get as much action in the 10 minutes or 12 minute games as you would in a full rugby game, if that's what you're interested in.
Yeah, it was England, I think, overachieved. They actually just were very, very in that semi-final against South Africa, which they were lucky to get to, having just snuck past the USA in injury time. That was the most exciting game, and they just had a without being exceptional. You look at Fiji, the units in that team are ridiculous.
The Fiji versus New Zealand, the other semi-final, was incredible as well.
Yeah. There were big names in the Fiji team, yeah?
Radrada, Tuisova, Nakarawa. Yep.
Where do they find the time?
Well, it's just what's amazing is sevens and 15s are now completely different sports.
Yes.
And I think, and we've talked about this before, I think World Rugby missed a trick. If it had been 10s, then I think you would have got some of the big names from 15s being able to play in the shorter version of the game. But you can't now, unless you're a freak of a Fijian.
Yeah.
It's the only circumstances.
They did used to do 10s, didn't they, with... in Australia. Was it Brisbane 10s, maybe?
Yeah, I think they still do that.
And what's his name? Bobby Skinstat's has been trying to launch a 10s series.
Yeah, I think the problem is, now there's more money in the game, and there's not necessarily that many more players, the demands on the players are so great, they just don't get released for these other things. So 7s does well, actually, to get the amount of stars it does. God knows what happened with the injuries of 10s.
But my point is, I don't think you can just go... All right, we've got a big World Cup. Let's get the big guns in.
Few that can transition.
Very few. I mean, Cubby Boy managed it, and Mike Ellery.
Cubby Boy
played for England
a good chunk of time. Mm. Mike Ellery is now full time. Ollie Lindsay Hague is now full time.
Is Mike Ellery full time?
Yeah.
Is Mike Ellery from Saracens?
Yeah.
Okay. What's his name? One of the guys from England is coming back to 15. I don't know who he plays for. McConaughey.
Gloucester, is it?
Okay. Yeah.
Rory McConaughey.
Yeah, he's a decent player.
He's a good player, but you're sort of fishing in the same pond for the same audience now, because it's two completely different sports, and they're not complementing each other enough.
No, they
whereas,
don't.
Whereas tens, if you got rid of sevens and made it tens, I think they would complement each other. You could have tens in the off season, or you could overlap, and it would be a. I think that would work better. But anyway, it was a good tournament, and it looked amazing, and it made me wish I was in San Francisco.
Yeah, I think the event of sevens is actually much, much better than the actual watching it on TV, I think 15s, I prefer to watch almost every game of 15s on television rather than go to the game.
There's times when you get a different perspective going to the game, but you can see defensive setups a bit better because you rarely get that wide, deep shot on TV. But to really appreciate that, you kind of only need to see most teams kind of once or twice a season to understand how they're setting up and how they're playing.
Yeah, completely agree.
Just an interesting point from the parallels between netball and sevens.
Yeah.
I was actually having a conversation on Saturday with a girl who works for England Netball.
Okay.
And she was bemoaning the lack of funding that England Netball are getting because it's not an Olympic sport.
It is, isn't it? Has it been dropped?
Well, no.
Commonwealth, it was.
It's Commonwealth,
but
it's
really?
Not Olympics. And she was saying it's because it's only women's. So be an Olympic sport, you need to have women's and men's. And that's such an advantage for sevens.
Are you saying we should go to the Olympics?
Go on.
Well, we could start up in men's netball. Men's netball. Why not?
Yeah.
Rather do that than play touch rugby. So I actually did play mixed netball. It was tremendous fun.
I know
and
you did.
We came up against a guy from the Caribbean, one of the islands in the Caribbean. They play it as like a main men's sport. My God, he was good. Like, so good. It'd be like me playing a Fijian at sevens. It was that much of a mismatch. Hang on. There was something else I was going to mention about funding and women. Oh, yeah, netball. Have you ever been to watch a high-level, well, high-ish level game of netball?
I watched some on BT Sport a little while ago.
So, yeah, you've got the Super League.
On BT Sport.
Yeah, so you've got the Super League, right, which is like the highest level. And then there's obviously multiple levels underneath that, right? So I guess the level that I went to watch was kind of broadly equivalent to Sedgley Park when they were really, really good.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, maybe Championship, Nash 2 or Nash 1, something like that, okay?
Yeah.
So it's pretty high up. There's some girls in there who were knocking on the door. girls. Who were knocking on the door of England or at least, you know, Northern Thunder, something like that. And we showed up, me and two other guys that played netball, because we were, you know, getting into the netball thing. And when we went in to watch this game of netball, this high-level game of netball, it was held in a school gymnasium. And it felt like I got the same looks off the girls, women, as if I just walked into the women's toilets. Like, we'd invaded this personal space. And people were like, why are you here? You know, they thought we were sex offenders.
You're in their safe space.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And I thought, well, it's a good spectator sport, but not if you're a spectator.
You were wearing Max with a hat and yeah. Those fake glasses with the nose on as well.
Exactly what I was doing.
So that's sevens. Yeah, it was a good event. I enjoyed it. But
we've done touch, anyway. We've done sevens, we've done netball.
Yeah.
Another bit of action this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
Super Rugby quarterfinals.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Have you not watched any of it?
No, not.
What,
no,
what
I was busy. I was in an air show.
I was busy in a. What was I?
Yeah, this is the most hipster, most stupid event I've ever heard of.
Stupid?
Well,
you would have enjoyed it.
Okay,
I can tell you that.
I can understand certain things.
What was the event before you said
it? It's called Blue Dots, Tim.
I had some friends at Blue Dot.
Of course you did.
Yeah. That one at Jodrell Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great fun. So here's the problem I have with it, fundamentally, which is there are many things you can do whilst enjoying a drink. Probably one of the few things you can't do whilst enjoying a drink is listening to high-level science quietly in an auditorium. It's just so horribly hipster, isn't it? You're there to be seen to be listening to science, but not actually taking any in.
Well, it was kind of pitched at the right level for either 5-year-old kids or me after 5 beers.
I'm gonna go to another sport and say on that front there is a baseball team in America, a sort of local baseball team, who are having Millennial Saturday this weekend.
Oh, amazing.
A themed event where they have a nap station, a selfie station.
They're pandering to snowflakes.
A nap station?
Pandering to snowflakes. And they, like, somewhere that people can go and have a nap.
My God.
Somewhere that people can have a selfie station and avocado burgers.
Wow.
So
wow.
I can tell you there was a lot of avocado flying around this weekend. And
some science experiments, some snacks,
and I did indulge in a little nap on Saturday afternoon after having a few too many beers in the sunshine.
Yeah, and then you went to listen to quantum physics.
No, after that it was purely more heavy drinking.
Oh, right. It doesn't sound like there's much science going on.
There wasn't an enormous
very
amount.
Token.
Yeah.
Who was the main event, Tim? Can you guess?
For Blue Dot.
Yeah.
Johnny and the Nosebleeds. I don't know. No, that's a made-up band. What?
Science
oh, right.
bands.
Brian
science,
Cox.
Science ba- ooh.
No,
and
no.
Dara O'Brien.
Science bands.
Science band. Not We Are Scientists.
Ooh,
no, that's
great,
a good
though.
One, though.
That would be great.
Okay. Ooh. I don't know if it's themed, but I can imagine something like Alt-J.
Ooh. They were there last year or the year before.
They were? Apparently. I don't know who they are.
No, it was. It is a science-themed name as well.
I'm going to kick myself, aren't I?
You are, definitely.
Go on.
Not Atomic Kitten. It was Chemical Brothers.
Chemical Brothers.
Stupid.
Chemical Brothers were
stupid.
Chemical Brothers were brilliant as well.
It's so contrived. Like a touch tournament, like an international touch tournament.
It's great fun. I'd highly recommend it.
I'm not sure the chemicals that they were talking about are more Breaking Bad than
it's all science, mate.
Lesson.
It's all science. So anyway, Super Rugby semi-finals, tell me what happened.
Yeah. Yes. Quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals.
Yeah, whichever.
So there's some very close games. So Crusaders, who were top, hosted Sharks, who were eighth. That was as predicted. 40-10, comfortable
Bloody
victory
hell.
For the Crusaders. The fourth place and the third place, fourth place and the fifth place, Hurricanes hosted the Chiefs. It was a 32-31 victory to the Hurricanes, which is a lot closer than it actually was, because the Chiefs scored two converted tries in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Crikey.
To make it a one-point game. Chiefs had a lot of territory in possession, but Kane's scrum and defence managed to hold them out. And D-Mac threw a couple of interception passes.
Was he playing 10?
He's been playing 10 all season. He's generally looked very good, but kind of when the pressure comes onto him, he is known to throw some wild interceptions, and Julian Surveyor latched onto one of them to go under the posts.
Mm.
In the other games, Highlanders travelled to the Waratahs, Sydney.
And I've heard of this one.
So they were 23-6 up at half-time.
Oh, it's plain sailing then. They're
the travelling team.
They're through.
And Waratahs scored 24 unanswered points in the second half. So the Highlanders threw it away.
I thought it was a miserable time to be a Waratahs fan.
Well, so first half was a miserable time, but second half, their big guns, Phipps, Foley, Kirtley Beal and Folau.
The boys?
Boss the show. Those boys tore it up. Kirtley Beal making breaks left, right and centre. Foley scored two tries. Folau got one, and again, making breaks all over the place. And then the final game, the Jags travelled to Joburg.
Please tell me the Jags won. Please tell me the Jags won.
They were in it until about 60 minutes.
Oh, cracking try scored by the right winger.
Crumbrink? Something like that?
No, Jags right winger. Yeah, I couldn't tell you the name of
him. Wait. They were playing the Lions, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, those are my two favourite teams, so it doesn't really matter too much.
So Crumbrink did score a good try from a crossfield kick from Yantes. Malcolm Mark scored a 40-yard interception.
He's back. He's back and he's fit and he's looking good.
Looking good. Dominant over the ball. Such a strong ball carrier. Kind of everything you want from Malcolm Marks. It was close until kind of 60 minutes, and then the Jags ran out of steam.
That's a Marxism I can get on board with, by the way.
Love it.
So the semi-finals next weekend, the two New Zealand teams play each other. Crusaders host the Hurricanes, which will be... I mean, they are the two best teams in the tournament this year. So it's sad it's not the final, but it does give the Lions or the Waratahs chance to compete. And Lions host Waratahs in Joburg. So, a couple of interesting games there.
Yeah, so fingers crossed for the Lions.
Is that all this weekend?
That's all this weekend.
Yeah. Yep. I would love them to actually win the thing, because they've been, two finals now? Was it two losses? One loss to Crusaders, one loss to Hurricanes.
Yeah.
They could just get over that line, because this team can't last forever. That's the thing.
Well, there's a few definitely going to Gloucester next season and to Sale.
Yeah, well, yes. So, Lions-based news. Apparently Sale are in the hunt, and I've heard this from multiple sources, and in the hunt is actually... Isn't that their logo? Anyway.
Are you trying to drop in Sale Sharks branding?
Branding,
slogans?
Though, yes. Join the hunt. They've joined the hunt for... I forgot his name now. Ross Cronje, yes. As backup to Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
Which I think is bizarre. And Sale have denied it, so I will take their word for it.
Yes.
They've never denied a signing and then signed
look,
a player.
All I'm going to say is, if they say something, I have to take them by their word. So they have denied it.
Why do you have to take them at their word?
Why? Because I want to go to press day.
You can still go to press day.
We have short memories around here.
Well, so. do you really want to go to... No, but hold on. That means Steve Diamond has you on a leash.
No, it just means that
You won't even speculate about what it could mean for fear of Diamond.
No. I have speculated, and I've said that I believe it's happening, and I've said that they have denied it.
Okay, so, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
So, but I'm also taking them at their word. If they say they're not going to sign him, well, then maybe they might. Maybe they might not. So, it's an interesting one because I always thought of Ross Cronier as the replacement for Faf de Klerk rather than cover for Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
So he replaced Faf de Klerk at the Lions for reasons. Well, I assume partly for playing reasons because Faf is hard to predict, to put it mildly.
And Faf and Elton Yantys are both very hard to predict.
God,
when you put them together.
Those two together.
Great in dry conditions. Great in perfect conditions.
To be fair, Faf's great in all conditions. Ross Cronier also took his place in South Africa.
South Africa, yeah.
So it's just, but they get on very, very well, allegedly, and I can imagine that is the case. So that might happen. If it does happen, I don't like it, though. I don't think it's a good signing. Because surely Premiership clubs, and this is not a sale point, it's a point for all Premiership clubs, which is, sure, get the talent in the starting jerseys, but why get the talent in the backup jerseys?
Yeah, it does feel like it's a bit unnecessary.
Because you're anticipating that your scrum half is going to be away for quite a lot of the season.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, it is. It's a very fair point, actually, yeah. But, I mean, then you have to go into your academy and then you have to see who's the second guy. That's how you should build your squad. You can't spend money on backups, is what I would say. I don't know what the deal is they would offer him, but that's why I'm actually a little bit sceptical of the deal going through, because I just don't see that as a sale-like thing to do.
Doesn't seem to make sense.
No.
Yeah, the money could be better spent elsewhere and improving that squad.
Who did I see? What club is it that's bought a prop that looks like an absolutely ridiculous unit?
Was it Ospreys?
No, it's a Premiership club, and it's
there is the Ospreys assigned. Is it the Moldovan?
Oh no, maybe that's him then. Maybe that. Yeah,
he's
that
enormous.
Is the one. Yeah, enormous and rapid.
Is he rapid too?
Yeah.
Some people have it all. I've got more interesting bits and pieces. If you want more JB's bits of interesting pieces,
go on then.
Come on. Just on this prop, so he's 1.9 meters, so about 6'3", 133 kg.
Wow.
Yeah, that is the fella.
He's a big boy.
He's come from France, yeah? Bourgoin or somewhere?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, hold your horses on that, because just on the South African thing, it ties in. So there's been, as we're seeing, the Lions, in rugby terms, aren't an apex predator anymore. They are being cannibalised. There's all sorts of issues there. There's lots and lots of voices, and Scout Burger's the latest to join them, that lots of people talking about the South African sides joining European competition, and now Scout Burger's come out and said that South Africa should join the Six Nations.
Well, I mean, that'd be Seven Nations, wouldn't it, Scout? So they can't join the Six Nations, or someone's going to leave.
But it was the Five Nations.
Yeah.
No is the answer. That's a simple answer. That is no. Why didn't they go and join a new tournament with Georgia, Romania, Russia, so on and so forth? The Six Nations stays as the Six Nations, and I won't hear any more about it. Why don't they have their own regional tournament? If they really want to get exciting in Africa, why don't they have their own regional tournament with Zimbabwe and try and improve one or two other nations? That makes so much more sense.
So
everyone seems to be making shortcuts here without trying to develop rugby within their group of countries, and without having actual real life rivalries.
What would you do if you were an administrator of South African rugby and there was a big chunk of cash just over there?
But yeah, it's only a big chunk. But it's not quite like that, is it?
No,
not really. It's more like saying, what would you do if you lived across the road, and across the road from you was a massive, massive house that you could potentially move into if you broke into it? You know, that's a better analogy.
Well, I think the cash thing is a real thing, because that was a huge draw for the Pro 14, allowing the South African clubs in, because you get a market of nearly 50 million people where rugby is the primary sport, and there are big TV deals to be had.
They are rugby mad, but it doesn't seem to have translated into Pro 14 cash. The TV deal has, but the crowds haven't.
Every team got £500,000 off the back of that.
How sustainable is that?
I don't know.
It's £500,000 they didn't have.
I mean, there are no crowds in those stadiums.
No, but the crowds are, they're almost c- completely separate. They're independent of the TV money, aren't they?
And how much more would that sponsorship on the shirt be worth for South Africa if they were in a Six Nations tournament?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But how much more is it worth for Six Nations? I mean, I guess if it works for everyone. But then, you know,
I don't want it, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, what's going to happen to the rugby championship? And
so, yeah, for the record, I definitely don't want it. I think it's a bad move on both parts. Commercially, I can understand it if you're putting two. So there's a big lump of money in South Africa, TV money. You've got a big market for that TV, for the brand and the image rights. So commercially, it might make sense. From a competition point, it doesn't make sense.
Yes, agreed. It definitely doesn't, because it destroys other rugby competition. That's the problem with the Six Nations argument. Let's all join the Six Nations, not if it's at the cost of the place that you've come from.
I like the theory of continental championships.
Yeah. Yes, exactly right.
I like that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you had an African Continental Championship with South Africa in it, it's going to be South Africa hammering everyone by 80 points to nil.
Mm. And the rest.
Everyone else just playing against each other and being relatively competitive.
Yeah, and it actually doesn't level out as we hoped it would, because look at Italy. They're still not leveled out.
Yeah.
And you say the other five are actually pretty even, but Italy have just never done it, so it doesn't actually always work.
No. No, the Argentinian experiment in both, obviously now, Super Rugby and in the Rugby Championship, it will take a lot longer, but there have been some positive signs.
I tend to think that Argentina are better than Italy.
I think they have more than Italy in all
competitions.
I would agree, yeah. They've got the history of the World Cup. They've got pedigree of producing lots of talented players rather than a handful like Italy. Yeah. In fact, two of Italy's best players have some Argentine heritage in Parise and Castro Giovanni.
Well, that was it was ever thus, wasn't it? That Diego Dominguez.
Yeah, that's true.
And Marcus Aierza was both, like, had both.
What
is the link between Argentina and Italy? Because there is clearly
war criminals,
a big link. Fascist dictatorship.
Yes, they are. You need to scratch the surface. Soon find out.
Good national anthems, that's another one. Anyway, you were going to say some more...
So, got some rather interesting gossipy stuff from Leicester, and got some little bit of gossipy stuff from England, as it happens.
Okay, well, before you do, let's go into the Leicester thing by hearing Manu Tuilagi getting really excited for the new kit launch of Leicester Tigers. I'm hoping this is a good kit. Please be a good kit, Leicester. But Manu Tuilagi, you can just hear how buzzing he is to be doing this little marketing video.
It's a dream come true to wear the Tigers badge, especially the history of the club, and you know all the players before us. So you know, it's a privilege to wear it and you know try and continue the legacy.
Yeah, now
buzzing.
Yeah. So when I hear that, I know he's saying words other than the words that I'm hearing, but what I'm actually hearing is, do you know the film Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
And it's like, F you, pay me. F you, pay me. That's all I can hear as he's talking. Look at him, so proud. F you, pay me.
I'm trying to look at his eyes, see if he's trying to, try and work out if he's under duress at that point.
Yeah, money's getting paid. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, so not all is happy in Leicesterville. Matt O'Connor. Now, I'm very... it's a difficult one because he came back 2 weeks late for pre-season. Nobody knows why. No one can find out why.
He was AWOL.
He was AWOL, it sounds like. Now, it might turn out that everyone's been quiet about it because it could be compassionate leave or something like that. So you don't actually know. But from what I understand, he's not been at the first 2 weeks of pre-season. Furthermore, I don't think he's going to be lasting particularly long.
You have mentioned that once or twice.
Yeah, and this just confirms my incredible bias. So when I was searching around trying to support my bias, this is one of the things that I found. On top of that, they're also sending out boys on loan. So Voss was announced on loan. He is the lock that they've got from Jersey. Once they got rid of Don Barrow, they panic signed someone and turns out they can't fit him in the salary cap. Alongside him will be Mapalangi. I think that's probably been announced by now, but he sounds like he's also going on loan to Coventry, which is quite a big deal when you think that Mapalangi is a big deal.
Yeah. So Valentino Mapalangi.
Mapalangi,
he was involved quite a lot at the start of last season, much less so as the season went on.
Yes, and you know, he has got some holes in his game.
And they've got Guy Thompson and
Denton.
And Dave Denton.
And Will Spencer.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not sure how much Will Spencer affects it, but the other two, completely legitimate. So that's how they're looking to solve their salary cap problems. I can't see this season continuing with O'Connor at the helm, because I believe he's going to get fired, and I think I'm right in saying that they are basically looking for the first opportunity to do so. And then I can't see them continuing with either Cohen or, what's his name, Jed? I can't remember his surname now.
Glynn?
Is it Jed Glynn? Glynn?
No, that's someone else. No,
I can't remember his name.
I know a Jed Glynn. I don't know what they do or who they are.
Yeah, but I can't remember his name either. It could well be that. Now, if you want to know who these chaps are, one of them is the Tigers CEO, who is effectively in charge of recruiting. Matt O'Connor does not recruit, and then it is Jed Glynn, actually. He sits below him and does all the deals. So, for instance, when the Monopola deal was being done, they offered him ridiculously low wages to stay, which is why he went to Newcastle, because their salary cap is so screwed. And that's where they are. This is sort of a continuation of what I heard last season. But it is interesting. The Matt O'Connor situation is interesting.
Yeah, and there's... I'm just being a journalist for a second, like putting that head on, it's like, well, there's not a lot of facts there. And it's a lot of conjecture.
Well,
I'm not doubting or otherwise.
No, well, if I was to put my journalism head on,
yeah,
I would say that I have this from a conversation with a very senior player at Leicester who was called in and actually spoken to about this. So as a journalist would say, it is a very, very good source.
You also had multiple occasions last year a massive announcement coming from a very senior source on a Monday morning at Leicester.
It never happened.
That never happened.
But apparently...
Multiple times as well, yeah. Never happened. So,
there we go. I believe that Matt O'Connor will not be long for this world.
Well, when we get to Leicester doing our...
Oh, sorry, and that's the other one. Matt Tamua, that's the other big issue that they've got.
Yeah,
I am certain that he will be going at some point.
Well, that seems to be the general
consensus.
In between 1 and 5 years, he'll be gone.
At the end, when his contract
is over,
when it runs its natural course,
or the next contract after that he signs, he will be gone, and that's the end of that.
Unless for some reason he then takes up some kind of coaching clause at Leicester, but until that expires,
exactly, or back office role,
yes.
And you said England as well.
Yeah, the England one's funny. I've got a lot of, there's going to be an interview later this week. I'm going to put on Rugby Dungeon. It'll probably put a bit more light onto this. But basically, these sackings or these redundancies in England just seem to be incredibly unpopular, as you would expect. So also, just incredibly unjust.
Are you talking now about the junior, the under 20s coaches?
Yep. There was another high-profile coach which was let go last week. I don't think I'll mention his name, just simply for the fact that I'm not sure it's been announced, and also to people in like the media department. And this is all coming from one central place. The role of Dean, I think, the role of Dean Ryan in all this will come back to haunt the RFU. And that's one which I think people also should be looking out for, because it's not just the senior team where they've been struggling recently. It's all the things which Dean Ryan is in charge of. And this dismantling of the age grades under the premise of cost cutting sounds like it might not be the sole reason that they're doing it.
Do you think, because I never saw anything about cost cutting...
Well,
I just saw that
they've overspent. They've overspent on the stadium,
yeah,
and so they have a
okay.
They have There has been plenty of talk recently about needing to balance books.
Yeah. Okay.
And people in communications departments? Or
communications. Basically, anyone who they can really get rid of, they're getting rid of. But it's weird that it'd be on the rugby... I mean, on the rugby side and the non-rugby side. I mean, the RFU own nothing in terms of rugby players. So do they essentially contract the Sevens team, maybe? I've got no idea.
Yeah, like, Sevens and Women's Sevens essentially contracted, I think.
So, but in terms of 15s, they don't own anything. So the few bits of rugby operations that they do have, it's weird that they're cannibalising that, but that's exactly what they're doing.
But they're also the richest union in the world.
Yeah, so... Well,
how badly have they overspent on the...
Well, maybe you could tell me, Phil. I mean, I can't... Not for, you know, not exact figures, but I mean, how much could you overspend on a stadium?
Is it easy to count bricks wrong? To accidentally order double the number of bricks you need?
Benting, is that difficult? Insulation?
All of those things are difficult if you get some bad cost advice initially. And it, obviously it depends on the contract. But when did the stadium work finish?
I don't know. Has it finished? I honestly don't know.
I'm not sure.
I didn't know there was an ongoing upgrade at the moment.
Yeah, so the thing is about this is, like, they have mentioned the North Stand has been overspent on. As they mentioned these redundancies, it wasn't like, oh God, the North Stand has been overspent on, and now we'll announce it. It almost seems like it's kind of like, yeah, a bit of cover. It's sort of convenient for them. But I tend to believe the people I've spoken to, which is that isn't the primary reason, particularly on the rugby side. And it's got more to do with Dean Ryan than anyone else.
That's what I thought it was to do with.
Yeah,
because I mean, you could. Depending on the contract you're operating under, you could always spend significantly on any construction project. I find that unlikely.
Yeah.
Because they don't know the contractual setup. It's unlikely that the RFU would have wanted to take a whole host of additional risk on themselves. They would have, if I was advising them, I would have looked for more cost certainty, therefore passing risk down the contractual chain.
Also, I suppose...
It's exactly what I would have done.
Whatever the case, it's hard to... judge things until you can look back, because who knows? Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Dean Ryan has been brought in to do a job. If he's doing that job and executing his vision, maybe that requires some changes, and in 3 years' time we'll be going, fair play.
Yeah, it's not as if England are struggling at age grade, though. I mean, they're perennial. They do very, very well.
Top two, certainly top four every single year in under 20s.
Yeah, did they get to the final this year? Or was it France won it?
France beat England.
England won the... No, England won it 3 years ago.
So it's not like it's a completely broken system.
I can't remember.
But, Dean Ryan strikes me, just thinking back about it, and I'm kind of just ruminating now, he does strike me as a weird person to bring into the RFU environment. Because he didn't do tremendously well with Worcester, although... You know,
I disagree.
Well, he got them relegated, he brought them back, and then he left 3 years into a five-year plan.
I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, he left partway through, but he...
I mean, the start of the five-year plan was tremendously unsuccessful. The midway through, he kind of clawed them back to where he found them. But then to leave in that period, I thought, was somewhat suspect. But yeah, you could argue, to be fair... that he had Deadwood to clear, and he did well building the squad back up.
And then there's lots of young guys coming through. Shona, Will Spencer had come through. They had a very, very young profile of that squad, much within the salary cap. And looking at what's happened to Worcester since they've started loosening the belt again, they've been struggling. And
And also you could look at Worcester, couldn't you, and say, hey, if England need facilities and they need an academy, Worcester's not a bad place to look. Great Wi-Fi. Good training facilities.
Dean Ryan, will not let that be scrimped on.
No, absolutely not.
For his youth players at England.
A man's got to stand for something, Tim. but more importantly would be what he used to write in the Telegraph. I don't know if he still does write in the Telegraph. I doubt he does. But he used to write in the Telegraph, and it always used to be both barrels at Stuart Lancaster. Now, at the time, I was all about both barrels at Stuart Lancaster. But on the other hand, I wouldn't be the man to bring into the RFU to sort out the rugby processes. So would I have employed myself? No, absolutely not. Would I have employed Dean Ryan? I think it's a very, very strange move, and it could turn out to be a very disruptive one.
Mm. We will watch with interest. What else have we got on our agenda, Phil?
Just on this, I'm just doing some digging. The East Stand is being redeveloped at Twickenham.
Oh, is it? I thought it was a North Stand. Hang on. Just before you tell us any more about the digging, Tim, whilst Phil's telling me this, I want you to look up Sam Burgess's hit from this weekend.
Okay.
Go on.
Yeah. £54 or £55 million expansion, which is, according to a Daily Mail article, more than £10 million over budget.
It's quite a lot.
It is. Yeah. So, but £10 million to a union that turns over hundreds of millions per year.
Well,
they've not a massive
like 400 million to artificial pitches up and down. No, is it 50 million? Maybe it's 50 million. That's a big difference.
It is.
This is how they got into this trouble.
When you add a zero to a number that's 7 or 8 or 9 figures, you're adding some serious money to it.
See, this is why they shouldn't have employed me or Dean Ryan, because these things happen.
Is this the hit where Sam Burgess shoves a shoulder right in the face of his...
And he calls him a very rude word.
Yeah, he calls him a very rude word.
Just have a look and tell me how many years you think he'd be banned for. In
rugby union.
The union for this.
Tigers pass off by Sam Burgess! Has collected Farrah High. Hang on a second. Did he get him on the...
It's saying, get up, you cat.
Get up, you cat.
Get up, you cat. You weak cat.
Weak cat.
You weak cat. Get up, you cat.
Now, when was just play that clip again, right?
Wow, I would imagine getting not only getting ended by Sam Burgess, but him standing over you.
This is the commentary.
Get him on the button or not.
And not being funny, right? That could be WWE. Could it? That could actually be WWE.
Oh, my word, yeah. Oh, my God. This is a career-ending manoeuvre.
When you hear that, I mean, rugby union, obviously we love it dearly. When you hear that, and it's been caused by the shoulder of Sam Burgess, thank God we are missing a trick here. Yeah. When was the last time you heard a commentary team that excited? they talk very flowingly and lovingly about the skills of the game and the beauty and the passing.
And good banter as well.
Yeah, top banter. Maybe the banter is to cover up for the fact that we don't have any Sam Burgess-style murders on the field.
Yeah, and these days, when you do get a massive hit like that,
everyone's finger wagging.
Oh, that's a red. Oh, that's got to be a red. Oh, let's go. Oh, red.
Yeah, I mean,
Sam
Burgess would have been removed from that field, right? You know, on that cart which they had it, when they took Hannibal Lecter to trial, with a face mask.
Who was it? Was it Justin Marshall? Was it Boomfar? More of that.
Yeah, that is. Go and have a look at it. It's a magnificent bit of rugby.
The most astonishing thing about this is, so that high shot, so. There's contact with the chest and the head and neck area all at the same time. Yeah. I mean, Sam Burgess's shoulders cover most people's kind of chin through to nipples anyway. So there's definite contact with the head and neck area there.
So I had a couple of rugby league lads in here earlier on, and they were explaining how it's fine. I was like, well, he didn't wrap his arms, did he? Well, yeah, but look, it starts at the chest. No.
So that in rugby union...
It's a straight red, isn't it?
It's a straight red. It's a minimum 6-week ban.
It's a red before he makes contact.
What was it in this?
He's been cleared.
I'm just going to look at it again.
Cleared. No case to answer, Your Honour.
Just watching it frame by frame.
Free to play next weekend.
Oh, well.
He passed.
There is contact with the chest, definitely.
There is contact with the chest. The guy does dip a little bit.
Yeah, because he's dead.
He dips a lot after contact.
I'm not sure he dips that much.
And do you know what? He doesn't
see Sam Burgess coming. He's completely blindsided.
Not a word of a lie. Not only think that Sam Burgess would be banned for 6 weeks, minimum for the tackle. Yeah. Minimum. I think he'd be banned a further 6 weeks for calling him a weak cat.
Yeah, a week. Certainly.
At least.
Certainly. I'm all right with that part of it. I would ban him for that. But no, yeah, fair enough. That would be a red. But
do you reckon he just...
If I could come like halfway between that and where rugby currently is, so seatbelt tackles, just let the boys play. Get
do you reckon
with
Sam
it.
Burgess completed that tackle, right? Turned to the official, locked eyes with him, and just looked at him like, Dave, come on, Dave, call me, Courtney. Okay. Just transfixed.
It's a hard man sport, that. If that's fair play, that is for tough men.
And that's exactly what I mean. That is the beauty of the sport. You've got to watch it and you're going to think, wow, I don't want to play that.
So the guy that Burgess hit was his former teammate, Robbie Farah.
Yeah.
He actually, Burgess does so much damage that he also takes out one of his current teammates.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brutal.
It is brutal. I don't know whether you found this, but Phil, because you played in the North a lot, but one thing I remember playing for Manchester, whenever you played, or even playing for Broughton Park, Jay, whenever you played in towns where rugby league was also played.
Oh, yeah.
They were nasty pieces of work. Oh, swinging arms all over the place.
Well, if you were lucky.
Most of them would have the forearm guards.
Yeah.
You never really know if there's something else other than just a bit of a padding on them.
Who was telling me this? Was it... Did Terry Newton have a deal with forearm guards? Like, I'm sure they made the forearm guard for Terry Newton.
Terry Newton, former Wigan prop.
Yeah, hooker. I think. Yeah,
but the forearm guard...
He made it famous, and I'm sure Rhino did a deal with him.
Ah.
That was the first official forearm guard.
Which Scott Quinnell then got a bit of that.
Smashing it into other people's faces.
But it's almost an admission before the fact that I'm going to whack people with my foot.
What's that for? Nothing.
Yeah.
Or this?
Nothing.
The amount of times I got clocked by a swinging arm by someone from a rugby league town somewhere like Lee or...
Oh,
the Warrington team.
I had a horrible one against Eccles. I've never been knocked down like it ever. Just kind of underneath and then up through the chin. Absolute.
Mm. Like you snapping a mackerel's neck the other week.
Yes, exactly. Very similar.
Oof.
Very similar.
Brutal.
Yeah. Any more rugby to talk about?
There's one big news story from
last week
that we've
not yet
covered.
Talking about being brutal.
Yeah, brutal in good and bad ways.
Oh, I'm interested, though.
The retirement of Sam Warburton.
Oh, bloody hell, yeah, that happened.
Age 29.
I can't believe we didn't talk about this sooner.
Two Lions tours, captain two Lions tours, youngest Lions captain.
All right, so shall we do
this? Unbeaten Lions captain.
Yep.
Shall we do this in two ways?
Yep.
Let's do the first bit, right, which is we all have to say nice things, and then we'll do it in a second way.
Okay. You say your nice stuff then.
So, like, a truly brilliant leader for the Lions.
Yes.
I mean, like, you don't realise his value until, like, something like the Lions, where there was really no one to turn to for the last Lions tour. He almost got the job by default. And he wasn't even fit for the first test. I mean, no, he was fit, but he was dropped. It wasn't until he came into it you realise what a fantastic leader that he actually is. He's been doing this for Wales for God knows how long. I mean his value when he was fit would be hard to overstate.
Yeah, agree with all that. And something that really kind of stood out for me was I didn't like the call of making him Lions captain in 2013. You were 24.
Yep.
You had O'Connell, Brian O'Driscoll, who had vastly more experience both as players and captain at club level and international level. And I thought it was the wrong call. But I was wrong. And he brought that team and that unit together and led from the front, both on and off the field as well. Because when you listen to him off the field, he's very, very...
He's very calm, isn't
measured,
he?
Yeah. He articulates his point very well.
I mean, there was a wonderful, wonderful gif of him. In a South Africa game, where he makes a tackle, spins around, there's three South Africans, and they're literally kicking on the floor because they can't move him out of the jackal position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Tim, would you like to say anything nice before we carry on?
Just on that that leadership, I think he seemed quite unassuming and quiet on the face of it, but I think he's one of those characters who would be first on the training field, last off.
Yeah.
Absolutely meticulous in his preparation, a true modern-day pro, And yet never ever drop that intensity. And I think those characters are really quite rare.
Mm.
And that, along with being ferocious on the pitch, but really calm and measured off it, it's yeah, much like kind of a Paul O'Connell. He is in that kind of mould.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to... Okay, so here's the flip side of this retirement.
You're going to Stuart Barnes it?
Why? What did Stuart Barnes say?
Oh, Stuart Barnes just... He made some interesting points, but he went, it wasn't that good.
He said he's not a great, was the point yeah. he was he, trying
he's
to
not
make.
Great.
So difficult, right? He has achieved things at the very height of the game, right? To be fair, his record against Southern Hemisphere teams wasn't stellar. But then his Lions performance probably, you know, cancel that out.
Yeah.
For me, the most disappointing thing by far, and I'm going to temper this by saying, I hope the retirement isn't through one particular injury which he couldn't come back from. I don't think it is. He mentioned injuries.
Neck and knee.
Yeah.
So he was out with his knee. Oh wait. Out with his neck, and then had a further injury to his knee, both of which required surgery.
Yeah. I mean, look, if it's just straightforward injury, nothing can be done. But the two things that I thought were, he's going to retire and has never really done anything of any significance whatsoever in the club game. He's been with Cardiff Blues for God knows how long. Cardiff Blues' last significant game was the final in Europe, which he had no part in. Prior to that, it was the final where they lost against Leicester. I think that might have been his only ever big club game, which is, you know, which is a real shame. And I think the guy you need to look at to see how that was handled would probably be someone like Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah,
who decided, you know, I've done everything with England. I need to go away and do something else. And I think that's what makes Johnny Wilkinson an absolute great. And I think there'll always be a hole in Sam Warburton's career where he didn't do enough in Europe. In fact, he hardly ever played in the senior competition and didn't do enough in the club
and
game.
Let's think of another Welsh great then.
They're hard to come by,
Shane Williams.
Yeah, I'd say the same about him. You know, that's why the Irish greats are true greats.
Alan Wynn.
Yeah. I mean, they've got to do something in the club game. Like, that is why the Irish greats are true, true greats. Like, O'Driscoll in those Leinster teams. Johnny Sexton will be a great. Paul O'Connor.
Yeah,
you know,
Paul and Ronan O'Gara.
I think those guys are a different standing altogether than any, really, of the current Welsh team because of what they've done in Europe. So, same with Martin Johnson. And that's the difference for me.
Yeah, I can see that point. It's maybe not too late. Look at Juan Smith.
Yep.
He had 2 years out of the game, older than Sam Warburton is now. Went to the south of France, dose of some special vitamins, and you know what they serve down there.
Yep.
And came back and won it all.
Yeah. I'd love to see him. I wonder if part of this as well is Sam Warburton is a test match animal. Do you know the way that phrase I hate, which Eddie Jones uses yeah. about certain players?
Which is nonsense, but...
Which is utter nonsense, right?
Yeah.
But he lives for the test match. Now, if he legitimately couldn't get his place back at Cardiff Blues because he wasn't fit enough or wasn't healthy enough, and they've got some good sevens there in Navidi and, I want to say Ellis Jenkins... Could he really be seen as the answer for Wales if he can't move those two?
I think if there was a sniff of being fit in time for the World Cup,
yeah.
he would 100% be
if
there.
If he was fit, right?
I don't think he's got... Yeah, no, if he was fit, and which is clearly the issue. I don't think he's doing it to save face in some way.
No,
well,
I don't.
I kind of think maybe he is. Maybe, you know, the road back through Cardiff is going to be so hard. Establishing yourself ahead of these fellas is going to be so difficult. And he's at the height of his powers. And he can just go into the media. And in fairness to him, why not?
Rugby's a World Cup a year and a bit away.
Yeah,
but rugby's a hard
all
cool
of
game.
That can wait.
But
all
he
of
is,
that.
When has Sam Warburton ever taken the easy route? So are you saying too
hang
hard?
Hang on, you would argue, wouldn't you, that most of his career has been pretty easy because he never played much for Cardiff Blues.
But
you
know, like, he's had 40 games. He was injured.
Like 44 games for Cardiff since I think not this Lions tour, the last one, and 30 something for Wales. you know, so he's been used almost as much for his national team as he has for his regional team. Now, you could say that's smart player management to get the national captain up and running.
And also injuries. He's been injured so much.
Yeah.
So do you think he's taking the easy option? Like, genuinely?
I mean, I would have preferred him to retire from international and then pursued
Do you think he's taking the easy option?
I don't know of the extent of his injuries. Look, if it's injury-led, the answer is emphatically no. If it's not injury-led, the answer is yes. I believe he has.
So I am 100% certain it will be injury led.
Yeah, well, then you can't criticise an individual for physically not being able to play.
14 months away from a World Cup.
Yeah.
If there was even a sniff, he could potentially get in. Much like Haskell could have gone and got a more lucrative contract than the one he's on.
Yeah.
If there's a sniff at the World Cup, that is the carrot that is dangling right there, and I don't think he would have given that up lightly.
Do you really think, okay, because he's always been the automatic choice, that he would be happy to fight it out at Cardiff Blues in the same way that Haskell is?
Yeah.
Because Haskell's always had to
100%.
Do that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not certain.
100%. And, I've completely brain farted what I was going to say then. Never mind. Can't have been that important.
Was it Love Island?
Yeah, it might have been.
Is it Love Island based?
Yeah, maybe.
There is some good news for... So, bad news for Sam Warburton, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Probably bad news for Gatland. He loses first name on his team sheet. He loses a very experienced... One of the most experienced captains in world rugby, especially considering his age. It's bad news for Martin Williams and any other former Wales back row who does a bit of punditry on the side.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because they're going to be
dreading this day.
They're going to be getting substantially fewer gigs.
I wonder if that conversation was had prior to this.
What, with Martin Williams?
No, I mean, with Sam Warburton. I'm being deadly serious. Like, you know, maybe his agent picks up the phone, look, Sam, I'm not sure if Sam's going to be able to make it through to the World Cup, blah, blah, blah. Would you be able to have him in studio?
Well, he's already done... He's already done work, and you are a stupid rugby player if you're not considering your post-career options at every stage of your career.
Let me be very, very clear. If it's injury, or even if it's not injury, even if it's a case of actually, I'm just going to get a really good media gig now going forward. It's a hard, hard, cruel game. So no real problem. Ultimately, I would love him to be able to recover and then retire from international and go and do something in the club game.
The other thing I was going to say that I brain farted that I forgot, it wasn't Love Island. It was that, of course, as we've talked about previously, the insurance money you get as a rugby player could play a factor in terms of whether or not you return. Because if you have the surgeries, return, then those conditions...
You're absolutely right.
If something goes wrong again, you can't then get the payout later.
Yeah, I would love... Such a tricky scenario, isn't it? Because you're basically accusing... You're not accusing players of lying, but...
No.
When people stand up and say, look, rugby's too dangerous because all these players are retiring because of injury, they don't tell the whole story because a lot of players are retiring because of injury because they can get the payment out at the end. So all we see is the double spread in the Times or Rugby World of all the little thumbnails of all the players that have retired due to injury. But we don't really know if they could have recovered and carried on playing. All we see is the bloody headline saying all these players have retired due to injury.
It's like gambling, isn't it? Red or black at the casino. They're kind of going, maybe I could get back and be fit and play and earn another contract.
And was it like 10 games and then that's a pre-existing injury?
I think it's 10 games. If you come back and you play 10 games, say you have knee surgery, you come back, play 10 games, then if that knee goes again...
Yeah, it's no longer covered.
And blows your career, it's not covered anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's... That'll be that.
And you're a long time retired. So good luck with it, Sam Warburton.
And he will be missed.
And one other outrageous story.
What?
Oh, yeah. From the Rebels... So there's two bits of news last week and this week out of the Rebels. Two late night altercations.
Oh, yes! Exciting.
So there's one new one that developed this week or this weekend with two of their young lads... getting into a brawl, but that seems to pale into insignificance with the altercation, or the alleged altercation between
Anamaki Maffey.
Anamaki Maffey and Lopetti Timani.
Yeah, Lopetti Timani is a big old boy, isn't he?
He is a big old boy. Anamaki Maffey is a big boy, and this is a big issue for Japan ahead of their World Cup. He's their number eight.
Yeah, this sounds like a real matchup.
More's the point. He might be watching. He could well be watching the World Cup from a jail cell.
Yeah,
is it that serious?
So the allegation is he was hunted, beaten, bundled into the back of a car for 4 hours.
Oh my God!
Until he managed to escape and then was chased.
This is what Lopetti Timani has claimed. He was invited round for dinner after a game.
So far, so good.
He was invited round for dinner for a game. I don't know whether alcohol was involved. Who knows? But anyway, Lopetti Timani admits that he made a comment that was a little bit rude or risque or whatever. And
how rude? How risque?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Lopetti Timani claims Anamaki Maffey was upset that happened in front of his sister, or was about his sister. I don't know which. Whatever the case, she was at the table, and that he got very upset about that. And he claims that Anamaki Maffey and his brother beat him, that then he managed to run away, and in the process of trying to call his brother, they saw the light on his phone in the dark, chased him, grabbed him, bundled him in a car, and beat him some more. That's what Lopetti Timani is claiming.
Let's just break this. It's really Britain on the game tape here. So he's, first of all, what could you possibly say, right? Which is that you've been invited around for tea, right? So it's not like they've invited their mortal enemy around. You know, they're obviously close in some way, because he's having tea with his sister and his brother.
Yeah.
So, you know, these aren't mortal enemies.
Again, I don't have the facts in front of me right now, so I think that's my recollection of remembering the story.
That's broadly in line with the reports that I've seen.
Right.
Don't want to libel anyone with a live case.
So he comes over to the house
at this stage,
and he's presumably said something completely off colour somehow, which has resulted in the two brothers. And is the other one a rugby player? Do we know?
He will have played some rugby. So, Maffey, born and raised in Tonga.
Here we go.
Oh, that's right. Timani admitted he used some rude language, like the Tongan word. He said it was rude.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, okay. So the incidents occurred. It's serious enough for them to beat him up. At that point, he then runs away.
Yeah.
Now, what were they hoping to achieve by getting the guy in a car? Unless it's actually you're going to dump a body somewhere. Why would you put someone into a car? That is utterly bizarre. And he's running away. That is jail time. That is jail time nailed down.
It doesn't look good.
Crikey.
Again, we've only heard one side of the story so far.
Why didn't it work out in Bath for him again? Wow, what a psychopath.
Yeah. So
again, we've only heard Tamani's side of the story, but it does not sound good. It sounds awful, horrific. The photos of Tamani's face.
I'm just sending a text. Dear Steve, sign him.
The Bad Boys Incorporated.
I've got a guy you might like.
The Night Out.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Matthew. Have you seen him before? No.
Yeah, awful story.
Yeah, it really
is. Definitely got to go to jail.
It sounds, based on the description of events that I've read, it sounds like he might well be doing some time in the big house.
It baffles me. I mean, top sportsmen do stuff like this when they've got everything, literally everything to work for and everything to look forward to. And then you end up in a jail cell. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, well, it's a fun story.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There we go.
Yeah.
So the one last bit, yeah, moving on to better things, the one last thing that we were threatening to do today was a bit of a review of the next two from last season's Avicii
Premiership. I literally can't. Not at this time. Not at 10 past 12 at night.
Oh, bloody hell. It's 10 past 12.
Well, but we're going to be running out of time if we don't.
All right, okay. So
doing our quick rundown of the teams, next in the league is Northampton Saints.
Quinns and Northampton are the next two. Yeah.
Who finished 10th?
Quinns.
Quinns.
Quinns finished 10th.
Oh, I actually saw Matt Simons on Friday, who is, I believe, a very important cog in the Quinns machine for this year.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's wandering around London.
The second row.
So Quinns have got obviously a new coaching setup. It feels like there's a freshness around that place, which I think was needed after Conor O'Shea. They went down the loyalty promoting from within route. Didn't work. Probably after someone like Conor O'Shea, who's been such a key figurehead, that I think they've come to the conclusion, belatedly, that it needed.
We need to be more like Saracens.
Exactly.
Yeah, this Harlequin's way is great, but let's be more like Saracens.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how they're going to go, is the answer. And this is going to be a bit of a stock answer for Northampton too. It's not because they're bad. I mean, they've actually got some decent players. I think Benny Taps is a big upgrade for them over
Jamie.
Huge upgrade, actually. I think Matt Simons is good. They've lost the enforcer, Charlie Matthews, who will be enforcing elsewhere. It's not that they're bad at all, far from it. It's just that everyone else is really, really good.
Yeah, the issue with Quinns that I don't think is going to change this season is that a couple of injuries, the depth in certain positions is big question marks for me.
The ball all-tracking as well, he could be interesting if he has a revival of form.
Yeah, all-track's not a bad signing. So I think they've recruited reasonably well. I don't think they've lost anyone that they'll be too worried about. I think getting Gustard in is pretty big. Exactly as you said, Tim. And if he can get the best, because they've got some serious, serious talent right across the piece. They've got, I mean, they should on paper have a great front row, but it just doesn't perform like a great front row.
It doesn't perform at all, does
it? They've got talent and athleticism in the rest of their pack. They've got experience and skill and guile and power and pace right across the back line. How Gustav brings all this together.
Do you know who I think is going to be their most important new player for this year?
Don't know.
Jack Clifford.
If he can get back.
If he gets fit, that is like having a brand new signing. I don't know where he is on his road to recovery, but they could really do with him back.
Yeah.
Didn't he come back at the end of the season?
He did, but I've got a feeling he got another knock.
He hardly played anything last season.
No,
he was in and out of your fantasy rugby draft team all year. Well, the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like last big impact game he had was England-Wales before summer tours, when he scored basically off an unbreak pickup from the halfway line. Embarrassing. You've got to say, haven't you, that the Quinns, the big thing about Quinns has to be mental fortitude, because they collapse so often, and they can score. They've got amazing players.
Yeah.
Who have they recruited again, other than Benny Taps?
Autorak, Matt Simons, Max Crumpton,
the Bristol
from Bristol.
Yeah.
They've brought in Nathan Earle from Saracens, which kind of feels superfluous to requirements. Yeah. Marcus Smith has been promoted from the academy because he was still on an academy contract at least until part way through last season.
When he became the most expensive teenager on the planet.
Yeah. And they've brought in Alex Dombrandt from Cardiff Metropolitan University. Hmm. No idea who he is.
Exciting, exciting.
And they've lost Jamie Roberts, Winston Stanley, Adam Jones was... He was officially a player last season. Yep. Harry Sloan has gone to Ealing. Sam Aspinald Robinson has gone to Leicester. Charlie Matthews. Cameron Hollenstein, the loosehead prop who didn't really play. And Sam Twomey. So they've not lost anyone, right. Really. There's no...
Really, no one, in fact.
Jamie Roberts is a big name to lose.
Well, he's also a big salary to lose. So
he is.
Off you go.
Yeah.
I see Quinn's improving...
Slightly.
But
they, yeah, I guess
a problem for Quinn, which will remain for the next couple of years at least, they lose a lot of players around internationals. So to lose Marler, Sinclair, Robshaw, Kerr,
Brown,
potentially Marcus Smith and Tim Visser as well. It's like it's not only your best players, but it's also your entire leadership group disappears at that stage.
And as I say, my concern for them is depth. Get a couple of back row injuries, get a couple of centre injuries.
Yeah.
And I think they're really struggling.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting. Although, well, yeah.
They'll finish, I think, I want to say they'll finish higher than 10th. I believe they will finish higher than 10th. They've got too much talent not to. And I do really like Gustard.
Yeah.
I hope he can get them firing.
He's open. Northampton Saints, the other underachievers last year.
And they have brought in some big names as well.
Haven't they just?
I think they go backwards before they go forwards.
Run through the recruitment.
Dan Bigger. Takele Nairavoro, the enormous 20-stone wing who's just equaled the try-scoring record in a Super Rugby season for the Waratahs with 15. He'll be hoping to add to his tally in Joburg. Ben Franks, World Cup winner, twice World Cup winner from London Irish, has come in.
Big.
Don Barrow's come in.
Yeah.
Andy Simons.
Good signing, that.
Has come in, the centre. Matt Simons' brother.
Mm-hmm.
Haskell has come in.
Great signing.
They've then brought in Matt Worley from Racing 92, who I think is a scrum half.
Mm-hmm.
An English scrum half who's. I think he had some time in Hong Kong.
Is he Scottish?
No, he's listed here as English, I think, but he's a British scrum half who's travelled.
English
around.
Speaker.
Yeah. They brought in Charlie Davis from the Dragons, another scrum half, and Andrew Kellaway from Waratahs, who's a utility back.
Mm, interesting. So, well, for me, Saints last year just didn't have enough quality in their starting 15. So they had quite a deep squad, but it just wasn't of high enough standard. And I think if you're a Saints fan, you're probably going to look back at last season and agree with me. For instance, they won the A-League pretty much at a canter. Who cares? You know, because they've got, you know, because they had quite a lot of depth of average players. I don't think that they did particularly well with the whole Malander thing. Malander kind of ran its course, but to get rid of Malander, but then to keep on Dorian West for the rest of the season is just ridiculous. I mean, Dorian West should have been the first out the door.
First name off the team sheet.
I completely agree. And, you know, the fact that they got rid of Alex King, who seems to actually have gone on to do much, much better things since he's left. So the organisational structure above Northampton wasn't particularly good. Going forward, I think the big names help, but it's all going to evolve around one man, and that's going to be Chris Boyd when he finally lands. So until we know exactly what his plans are with this team, I mean, I assume he's picking these players.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd hope so. Oh, Dan Bigger, you missed out.
No, yeah, didn't miss that.
He was first name on the list.
Chris Boyd seems like a pretty dynamic man that lots of people have very high praise for, and they've upgraded massively in some areas there. Dan Bigger is a whopping upgrade.
He's good, is he?
And Nairavolo for Ben Foden. A huge upgrade.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
I hate to go back to my Warburton point about Welsh players, but when you look at Welsh players that have left Wales to go and pursue their club careers, which ones have done well?
There's not that many success stories. Lydia? No.
Phillips?
Nope. Liam Williams.
Liam Williams is doing well. Lee Byrne? Thank God.
Lee Byrne, yeah.
Yep, Lee Byrne.
Halfpenny?
Not so much. No. George North?
Nope.
Jamie Roberts?
Nope.
I would say Charteris.
Richard Hibbard?
Hibbs has done all right, actually.
Yeah.
He's proved it. But, like, he doesn't look like the best hooker in the Premiership, does he? He does, actually, on some weeks.
Gethin Jenkins to Toulon?
Absolutely not. You know, I would keep away from these boys. Nick McLeod at Sale?
Josh Adams?
Fridge?
Fridge. He was still living in Wales, though, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Back to Northampton. Who are their, who's their number eight going to be?
Mitch Eadie, who was injured for a lot last season.
Well, that's where I worry about Northampton is how are they getting over that gain line?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, you got Big Luth and Andy Simons as your 12 option.
I'm really excited about Mitch Eadie if he can get fit. Really excited.
I was quite excited for him last year. He hardly played though.
Yeah.
He's not
Pickamalls.
No.
He's not the Samu Manoa they had, and he's not Pickamall.
No, he's neither of those players. He's a bit more athletic, but I think he'll be all right.
I think he'll be absolutely fine. Because they've got, I was going to say, the ball carriers. I'm struggling to name them, but I'm sure they can find something from somewhere.
The one disruptive thing, I think, is still going to be, where is Harry Melander going to play?
Yeah.
Where is his best? Because he is seriously talented.
They'd be surprised if they get rid. I mean, it would be closing the chapter on that stage of that era of the club. And if they can't decide if you're going to play 12 like I think you should, or fullback like he thinks you should.
So he reminds me, I was thinking the other day, he does remind me in a lot of ways of Jordy Barrett.
Yeah, that's a fair shout.
He's got a very similar skill set, similar speed. They're both quick, but like a deceptive.
Big guys.
Yeah, they're both 6'5 and rangy, but supremely talented all round game. And Jordy Barrett has played quite a bit at fullback, also quite a bit at 13. Mm. And I just wonder if you could, in the same way that you had Will Greenwood played a little bit, he's not the same level of pace, but good, intelligent player, read the game well.
Who's not at the same level of pace?
Greenwood.
It's not the same level of pace as
Malander.
Okay. As long as we had it that way round.
It's that way round, yes. I wonder if
that's
13 position.
That's a good shout. Because if he's put in loads and loads of tackling practice over the summer, maybe 13, maybe 15, is still a possibility. But no, 13, I'd be excited to see that.
Yeah, when I saw him play the AJ Bell, he looked to me as if he was comfortably the most talented player on the park. Like every time we got the ball, he did something.
Yeah, he is supremely talented, but he's finding the position and getting the team around him to allow him to do what he needs to do.
Mm. But you can imagine him in between, like bigger pulling the strings.
Yeah,
Big Luth and Nairavolo either side of him.
Yeah,
that's a pretty tasty look. Suddenly, you've got a pretty tidy looking backline.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that the Jordy Barrett comparison, particularly with Chris Boyd coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice angle.
Chris Boyd will 100% be focused on getting my beloved Canes to Super Rugby final.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure he's got one eye on the riches at his disposal when he lands.
Mm.
And I would have thought he'll have been making some comparisons between those two. So it'd be interesting to see where he plays most of his rugby next season.
So
Saints,
their front row is still pretty solid, is it? I'm trying to think.
They always spend money in the front row.
Mikey Hayward.
Hayward and Dylan Hartley.
Alex Waller.
Paul Hill is the guy I like.
Jamal Ford Robinson. Ben Franks comes in.
Ben Franks coming in. That's a big signing, that. That's a big signing.
They've got one of the Waller boys still there.
Rick, is it?
So I think I think Northampton are now a number eight away from being a contender.
Just
realised I'm on camera.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
It doesn't matter.
re-racking the balls.
Exactly.
So I think one of their problems will be the time it takes for Chris Boyd to settle. So we saw with Blackadder coming into Bath, he had less control over his squad, but also less time with his squad before the start of the season.
And that sort of started this awful cascade of temporary players that Bath had to sign in order just to get them through the season.
So... Yeah. I think it'll be difficult for them to make significant gains this season.
That said, Gloucester did all right. Hang on, that's not right, is it? Because Gloucester had Ackerman from the start. Did they?
He would have been... Yeah, he would have been equally delayed.
Yeah, and he did fine.
Fine from the start, but they still finished in seventh place. So
I'm going to go... I think Northampton are going to sneak into top six.
It's eighth.
Yeah, I think... It's hard to know now, because it could be... If all the clubs fulfil their potential, the top six places will be unbelievably difficult.
Yeah.
I don't think all the clubs will fulfil their potential, partly for the reasons that we've already mentioned, for these two particularly, and partly for others, for other ones, other clubs that we're coming to.
But I'm just looking at that Northampton side, and I can't see many... international players that are going to be going back playing autumn internationals besides Bigger.
Yeah.
And Courtney Laws.
Courtney Laws will.
Hartley?
Hartley, Laws, Bigger.
Yeah, you're right. That's it. Really, isn't it? Yeah, that's it. Nailed on. There might be the odd fringe player called up. Haskell will make it to the World Cup, obviously.
Obviously.
That's it. I tell you the guy I like. Is it Ludlam who plays there?
Lewis Ludlam.
Ludlam.
It's Lewis Ludlow and Lewis Ludlow.
Ludlow and Ludlam, I never know.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm thinking Ludlam, his name. Yeah.
Ludlam, Ludlam is Northampton.
He's a good player.
And Ludlow is Gloucester, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a bit more of... Who's the Tom Collins?
Tom Collins, yeah, the outside back. He had a great start to the season last year.
That's what he'll do. He'll start rapidly, because it's nice and dry, and he's quite small, and he's rapid. And then as the season goes on, he'll get less and less effective. He does that quite often, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, right.
There we go.
That is a pod.
Oh, at least it's not 20 past 12.
It's the commitment. There you go. Well, you know, if you didn't want to talk about Love Island last night, we could have got this done then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Speaking of which, see you in the morning.
Yes, we'll do. If you all were wondering where our Love Island pod is, we're going to do tomorrow morning, because we are so committed to broadcasting.
You guys content. Are definitely more committed than me.
You've got an airport to build.
Certainly do.
Right.
On that note, I'm off.
Bye. Right,
in a bit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.